You're listening to The Crypto Report, exclusively on The Daily Stormer.
Experts claim to be a Bigfoot scream. It is regarded as the highest quality audio of the creature ever captured.
So tired of hearing two white men tell us what systems of oppression are. For Christ's sake. No, you don't know what systems of oppression are.
Susan, that's what we're asking is for people to know.
Yeah. Just stop. Just stop, Dan. Stop, Dino. You are not oppressed. And people in Oak Park are. And we are trying to recognize that as a community.
Mm-hmm.
This mayor and this board is obviously not willing to face history. We have a chance to make history. It is time for this community to face equity. Enough. And you stop it. You are a white male. Stop it. You are a white male.
No,
your skin is light enough. Stop it. This race issue is ridiculous.
Susan,
we are white.
Mm-hmm.
Have you talked to any person of color that has experienced oppression? I'm sure you have friends of color who haven't experienced it. Sit down with somebody and ask them, what is it like for you?
For you to make the assumption and frankly insulting.
Shut up if you have talked to them.
Susan, okay.
Because not everybody shares your opinion.
Okay.
You shouldn't have an opinion on that.
I met with constituents of color, and quite honestly, some of the feedback was that some of this wording was ridiculous. Now, I like the wording 99%.
Just leave it.
No, I'm not going to leave it. It's two words. I would like this change to what I proposed, and I think that's a perfectly reasonable recommendation, and I would like to know what other people
think. Nobody cares what you guys think.
Well, I
can't. You know what? Nobody cares.
Well, hey, time out, y'all. Time out.
You wanna sit here and say that I'm a goddamn fucking Russian? You get my face and then I'll beat your goddamn ass, you son of a bitch. You piece of shit. You fucking goddamn fucker. I said fuck it. You fucking crossed the line. Get back to your goddamn fucking head. Stop pushing your shit. You're the people that fucked this country over and gang raped the shit out of it, lost an election. So stop shooting your mouth off, blame it on the enemy. You got that, you goddamn son of a bitch. Throw your hand up, sorry, but I'm done. You start calling me a foreign agent. Those are fucking fighting words, excuse me.
You wired me awake and hit me with a hand of broken nails. You tied my lead and pulled my chain to watch my blood begin to boil. But I'm gonna break. I'm gonna break my. Gonna break my rusty cage and run. I'm gonna break. I'm gonna break my. Gonna break my rusty cage and run. Too cold to start a fire, I'm burning diesel, burning dinosaur bones. I'll take the river down to Stillwater and ride a pack of dogs. I'm gonna break. Gonna break my, gonna break my rusty cage and run. I'm gonna break my, gonna break my rusty cage and run. Wow. when the forest burns along the road, like God's eyes in my headlights. When the dogs are looking for their bones, and it's raining ice picks on your steel shore, I'm gonna break. I'm gonna break my. I'm gonna break my rusty cage and run. I'm gonna break. I'm gonna break my. Gonna break my rusty cage and run. I'm gonna break. I'm gonna break my. Gonna break my rusty cage and run. I'm gonna break. I'm gonna break my. Gonna break my rusty cage.
Welcome to the Crypto Report. Yes, indeed. Welcome to the Crypto Report. I'm your friendly neighborhood Asmodor, and we have got one hell of a show for you this week. As promised, as demanded by the listeners, we are not recording this one on DLive. So there's no terms of service to abide by, no censorship to suffer under. We can even say nigger. We've got Hate Farmer with us.
Welcome, Filthy Goyim.
And graciously sitting in for WhiteTuber, who is MIA today, we have as a pinch hitter member of the Wrecking Crew, Lee Rogers. Welcome aboard, Lee.
Hey, thanks for having me on.
Yeah, yeah. We got a big show today. We got a lot of stuff to talk about. A lot of crazy stuff going on in the news. And a lot of other things that perhaps aren't considered newsworthy. But let's start off talking about a topic that's close to my heart and close to, in other ways, to Hate Farmer. This is from the MyNorthWest.com website. The headline, heroin, meth, fine in Washington, but flavored vaping products have to go. This is written by someone named Dory Monson. It says, Jay Inslee is putting his foot down on vaping with a new... And that's the... Jay Inslee, that's your governor, right?
That's right.
Okay.
And he was also a presidential candidate until... I guess for like a minute.
Yeah, until nobody voted for him.
Yeah.
Jay Inslee is putting his foot down on vaping with a new executive order to ban all flavored vaping products. Washington became one of the first two states in the country to legalize marijuana in violation of federal law. We have county prosecutors who have effectively legalized personal possession amounts of hard drugs by refusing to prosecute possession of less than 2 grams. We have thousands of people in our state who are suffering because of their addiction issues. It puts them on the street and leads to a life of crime. It costs about $38,000 a year to feed a heroin habit. And the only way an addict who can't hold down a job can afford that is by breaking into your car and your house. We've encouraged as much heroin, as much meth, and as much marijuana as we can. We have become one of the drug capitals of the U.S., But because of 7 cases of vaping-related lung illness, it is important to wipe out flavored vaping products. Now, look, and I got to say, I disavow this this next statement. Vaping seems stupid to me. I would never do it personally. But out of all the states in the country, how in the world can Washington, which has essentially legalized small amounts of hard drugs, ban vaping? That makes zero sense. Nothing Jay Inslee does these days makes sense. But wait, I think we can actually make some sense of this mess. Inslee lost out on his national spotlight when he had to end his presidential run. Now every other state enforces heroin laws. So coming down hard on heroin would not get him any attention. But if his state becomes the first state with an executive order banning vaping, that will put him back in the national spotlight. He is clinging to that last tiny bit of national recognition that he got when he was running for president. I'm confident that this executive order will save lives. I'm confident that it will save children from a lifetime of nicotine addiction, he said Friday. Okay, do you think that maybe enforcing heroin laws might save lives? In 2016, there were 219 opioid overdose deaths in King County alone. That's Seattle, right, Hey Farmer?
Yeah, and that's they've changed it to Martin Luther King County, so it's the county seal is a very disgusting looking.
Yeah, it's a profile of him, isn't it? Like a shadow profile of him. Why are the 7 vaping illnesses so much important to Jay Inslee than the hundreds of opioid deaths? That is my explanation for what's going on here. I'm not sure that's my explanation for what's going on there. What's your explanation for what's going on there, Hey Farmer?
I mean, certainly a great deal of it is like grandstanding and he wants to gain attention. But I think he just sort of hates working class people, and he hates the proletariat, the proles, like the ordinary people that he never rubs elbows with. Right. And so he sees people smoking or vaping, and he's like, "We got to do something about this. I see some construction workers like vaping. That must be bad."
Well, I think there's a lot of money changing hands behind backs from the tobacco companies and all, because they keep screaming about how they're doing this to stop children from getting addicted to nicotine. But by this logic, wouldn't you also ban cigarettes?
Right. Exactly.
What do you think?
Yeah, or
go ahead. Or if Farmer,
if he were consistent, you know, there's something harmful that endangers the user. Why don't have like telephone booths that you can walk into and just safely inhale the vape? You know, you have like a telephone booth sized gas chamber. You know, because that's what he's done with heroin and meth and all these other drugs, is they have safe injection sites where they, you know, you have a free nurse who looks after you, make sure that your wound, you know, your scabs are treated, that you get clean needles, that they dispose of the needles. They give you a safe, unadulterated drugs if yours are bad, and they test it for you. You know, so if he were consistent, he would put you in a gas chamber full of vape.
Yeah. Lee, what are your thoughts on this?
Yeah, well, I think you guys made some good points, but what you mentioned about the tobacco industry, I think, is probably what's going on here, because just a few months ago, all this talk about how vaping was like this big problem just came out of the blue. It just came out of nowhere. And I think it's because vaping was becoming more popular and all these tobacco manufacturers were losing out on sales. And so they got their lobbyists to talk to all these politicians and get a big media hysteria going about how vaping is killing people and all this crazy stuff. And when you look at it from a sane perspective, obviously the bigger problem is with things like opioids and harder drugs. I mean, vaping is not really...
Well, and cigarettes.
Yeah, exactly. The
thing is, like, you know, I guess you could say promote vaping a lot, but I absolutely always make it clear to tell people that like nicotine addiction is, in my opinion, the most powerful addiction there is, at least that I ever ran across. And I'm a guy who, as is well known, as I've talked about probably for thousands of hours over my broadcasting and blogging career, I'm a guy who went through several decades of alcohol and drug addiction, and the one drug that I never could and don't even try at this point to kick is nicotine. And I smoked for nearly, if not 30 years. nearly 30 years, if not fully 30 years, and was a nicotine addict for longer than that, because they were promoting nicotine addiction to prepubescent kids when I was a kid, targeted at kids in my demographic, you know, southern rural kids, by having our football hero Walt Garrison promote the use of Skoal, which in the 70s when I was a kid, a 10-year-old could walk into the gas station or the convenience store or whatever and buy Skoal or really cigarettes. You know, nobody cared back then. I mean, people cared, but the law didn't care back then. But they were promoting this. And I probably about fifth grade, I started dipping snuff seriously. And by the time I was 16, I was smoking. And after 30 years of that and having kicked everything else, I tried and tried to kick cigarettes, and they were literally killing me. I couldn't walk up a short flight of stairs without being out of breath. I was coughing and hacking. I was scared to death that I was going to come down with lung cancer anytime. And I had already buried several friends who were older who had died from complications from smoking, whether it be, you know, actual lung cancer where they had gone through the horrible processes of, you know, having to have parts of their lungs removed, and or from COPD where they you know, slowly wasted away, spent the last year or two of their lives on oxygen, in and out of emergency rooms every time they got bronchitis or a chest cold because it had become life-threatening, and just had a horrible, horrible slow way out. And I had tried vaping a few times before, and the only thing that had been available to me or that I knew about were the things that, like, these little things that they sold at gas stations and all that were tobacco company products, like the Blue, and there was a Marlboro branded vape, and they were little things that looked like cigarettes, and they did absolutely nothing. And I kept smoking, and then an actual vape shop opened near me, and I went and got a powerful mod with a tank and everything, and vape juice that had enough nicotine that it replaced the cigarettes. And it was amazing. Within like 3 days, I quit hacking up brown phlegm all the time. Within a couple of weeks, I was breathing better. In less than a month, I was feeling enough better that I went and bought a cheap bicycle to see if I would enjoy cycling to try to get in shape. And within a few months, I had graduated up to a better bicycle because it turned out I did enjoy it. And I had built up my endurance enough that I could go out and cycle hard for an hour up steep inclines and all kinds of stuff. So you cannot tell me that this vaping... and of course there's a million problems with it because, you know, people are buying Chinese products and products from who knows where else because there's not enough transparency in it because it's a new thing. But if you go to a reputable place and you're buying American made stuff, it's overseen by the FDA, all the ingredients that go in it, but it saves lives and it improves health. And obviously you're a lot better off if you don't do either. If you're not addicted to nicotine already, for God's sake, don't vape. Don't even vape non-nicotine vape juice. That's just the dumbest thing ever. But for all these millions of people who are vaping, who are smoking, it's a much better alternative. But, you know, like you said, Lee, the tobacco companies have got to be scared to death of this because it's one, it's an aspect of nicotine delivery that they cannot dominate the market with, because people who are into this have all these different options of devices. And I think the reason they're going after the flavored vape, that's definitely a tobacco company push thing, because the flavored vape is what kills the tobacco industries, because you have all these hundreds and hundreds of small operations where it's people who are totally into this, who are testing different flavors all day, and they come out with everything from fruit cocktails and you know, soda flavors to the kind of stuff that I enjoy, like the dessert flavors and everything. And like I say, there's just thousands of flavor, literally thousands of flavor options that you can get. And the tobacco companies don't want to, I mean, they're not going to open up giant operations to compete with all this. So the easiest thing to do is just to line the pockets of lawmakers and journalists. And when this fake crisis comes up, use that to get rid of the flavored vape, put all these local guys out of business, put all these companies that make all these different devices and mods and tanks and things out of business, and make it so that if you want to vape, your only options are these Juuls and Blues and things like that that they sell in the store, which they're going to purposely see to it that they are not what's required to get you off of the tobacco that they want you to continue smoking. Am I being too conspiratorial minded here?
I don't think so. I think you hit the nail right in the head. I mean, because this stuff didn't just come out of nowhere with them just promoting this whole idea that vaping is like some sort of national crisis. And especially when, like I said before, there's so many more important problems that we have in this country besides people vaping, and just trying to ban vaping and all this other stuff, it doesn't make any sense when you consider what's happening around us. So the only explanation is that it's being driven by some sort of money interest, namely the tobacco industry, because they stand to lose a lot of money if you have younger people who are deciding they want to vape instead of smoke cigarettes. And I'm pretty much straight edge, so I haven't followed like what is out there in the market for cigarettes in a long, long, long time. But I remember back in the 90s, like, I guess you had like menthol cigarettes. That was like one option you could have if you wanted to like have like a flavored cigarette. But I don't think they have like all the multiple options that you have with vaping.
No, they don't. Well, they've never had all those options, but they still have menthol cigarettes, and they've always had menthol cigarettes. But the thing that happened in the 90s was Camel came out with a few flavors of cigarettes, and I actually tried them because back in, well, it was in the 2000s, actually, early 2000s. But, you know, back in the early 2000s, I used to go on the websites and sign up for, you know, Marlboro and Camel and Winston and all of them, and sign up for whatever coupons I could get in the mail. And you'd constantly get, you know, two or three times a month, if you were subscribed to enough of them, you'd get coupons for free packs of cigarettes. And it was always something they were promoting. And so I tried some of them. I didn't like them. I was always a guy who smoked straight, just tobacco cigarettes. But there was a coordination between coming from people who were suing the tobacco company, you know, state attorneys general who were suing the tobacco companies to pay for the money they'd had to spend on lung disease and stuff like that, which was kind of just, in my opinion, because the tobacco companies got caught as far back as the 1980s, going before their CEOs, going before Congress, and under oath lying to Congress, saying there is no proof that, as late as the fucking 1980s, saying that there's no proof that tobacco smoking causes any harm whatsoever to anyone's health. And everyone knew they were lying. Everyone by that time had relatives and friends and all who had died from lung cancer and so forth. But they were really going after the Joe Camel campaign because they were claiming, you know, this is aimed at kids and all like that, which, yeah, you know, may well have been. You know, when I was a little kid, the Flintstones were selling Winston cigarettes. They had Fred Flintstone singing a jingle about it, about how great Winstons were. And so they outlawed these flavors, saying that the flavors were to induce children to smoke or whatever. And I kind of thought that one was a little bit of a reach, but it didn't matter to me anyway because I didn't care for them. But the thing is, cigarettes are so expensive now, and the quality of American cigarettes is so horrible as a product compared to what it was just two or three decades ago, because as every state has taxed them, they've had to lower and lower the manufacturing cost and keep everything basically at zero as far as the price of anything going up on their end. And the cigarettes that you buy now are not even cigarettes in the sense of what they once were. And what I mean by that is, you know, like if you go and buy mass-produced brand name beer now, it's not really beer. And it's the same thing. Like if you go and buy Budweiser now or Coors or whatever, the flavors and all aren't different because they have these select hops and select grains and select brewing methods. The beer is not really even beer. There is some brewing to it, but it's basically a soda with alcohol, because what they've done is they've done enough brewing to get the bubbles and stuff in there, and they've got all these artificial flavors and sweeteners and stuff to make it taste like their brand. Well, the cigarette companies do the same thing now. And of course, for decades, they've been loading them up with chemicals, but the chemicals were basically there to get you more addicted. They were there to make the, like they would put, it was a household product. Anyway, they would put that in there because it would open your lungs wide open to take in the nicotine faster. But now, if you go and buy a Marlboro, the reason it tastes like a Marlboro is because they just use all this cheap tobacco that they buy here and there. They're not doing select tobaccos from America and Turkey and all this other and mixing them and sending out these guys who are like, have been tobacco growers and experts and all this for decades and having them do these blends. They're just chopping up a bunch of tobacco and adding chemical flavors to them. And the quality is very low. The price is very high. And this vape is killing them. And it's not just the fact that, of course, it's a big deal that young people who decide to use nicotine are using vape products instead. But the other thing that's killing them is the people who are their bread and butter. And that's like late 20s to death age smokers are converting over to vaping by the millions, and they're not converting over for the most part. Now the Juuls, they seem to have a lot of people going on that. And for some reason they've been going after the flavors on those too. But for the most part, they're not going to Juul, they're not going to Blue, they're not going to that kind of thing. They're going to their local vape shops, or they're getting on websites and buying this other stuff. And the other thing that's really incredible about this whole controversy is that none of these lung illnesses, vaping illnesses that have occurred in all this time that this controversy has been swirling out have occurred with nicotine vaping products. They have occurred exclusively with adulterated THC, in other words, marijuana vaping products, most of which were illegal, being sold either on the streets or, for the most part, at immigrant-type convenience stores to minors, and they're called dab sticks. And that the FDA has known about this at least since early September, and this information, though you can find it if you go searching really, really hard for it, is not available to the public. You just have people in the state houses and in Congress and everything screeching about this nicotine vape. This is the kind of thing that, you know, regardless of what you think about vaping, I think this points out, it's a paradigm that you can hold up about the controlled media. What do you guys think?
Well, yeah, I think the fact that the media has really played a role in hyping this hysteria around vaping without giving the proper context to the people who watch their shows and watch their broadcast, I think says a lot. Because really, as you said, I mean, a lot of the problems with these vaping deaths, the few ones that have happened, have been because of rogue products. They haven't occurred as a result of legitimate vaping products in legitimate vaping shops. So they're essentially lying by omission, trying to claim this is a huge crisis without giving people any sort of proper perspective. So yeah, it's just another aspect of the clown show that's the Jewish media. That's really what we have here.
Yeah, I hate
Farmer. It's also telling that Juul and Blue, the people with the largest roster of lobbyists, are sort of like left out of the fight here. And it also sort of gives the game away that when they talk about flavored vape, they don't mean flavored vape. They mean, because the tobacco flavored one is tobacco flavored. That's an additive.
Yeah, and menthol is left out too. Menthol is exempt.
You know, I had always just assumed that Big Tobacco were behind the vape thing. I mean, it just seems like they really dropped the ball. That would be a market that they could move into. You know, the writing was on the wall. Anyone could have told that this was going to happen. But what I noticed is it's a similar dynamic between opioids. You know, they in the aughts and everything, and before that, they were way over-prescribing opioids. And then they clamped down on it. And then people had to turn to a less safe black market alternative, heroin.
Right.
And so now, you know, so they sort of create a market for it. And then they either highly regulate it or they basically force people to go to a less safe alternative. And so vaping was an alternative to the thing that the World Health Organization says is one of the largest causes of preventable deaths.
Vaping or smoking?
Smoking, sorry. And then they allow that to be out on the market. They allow it to become popular. I'm not saying it's a conspiracy. It's just, you know, it could just be ineptitude on the legislature's part, obviously.
Yeah.
And then they take that away. So your only alternative is to basically go back to smoking. Just right. Like your alternative to popping pills is to go to heroin.
Right.
So,
well, and I'll tell you another parallel that I see here that is such an overbearing thing on our lives and our systems and our culture and everything is that you see this collusion between big government regulation and big corporate interests that is used to crowd. It's like the cheapest way to eliminate competition and crowd out all the less than, you know, international corporate interests. Like a good example is our food. One of the reasons that our food supply is so unhealthy and that the West, but especially Americans, are so unhealthy is because you have this system of regulation that these giant corporate farms, these giant corporate mega farms, that are bad for in every way. They're bad for your health. They're bad for your freedom of choice at the supermarket. They're bad for the environment because of the ways that they operate. They're bad for the animals that they deal with. I mean, if you want to see some real brutality, compare the butchering methods of a family farm to a corporate feedlot. And the living conditions for animals from a family farm to a corporate feedlot. And the way that this works is you have all this regulation coming down from the Department of Agriculture and the FDA that, and this isn't just going on in America. I read an article on Zero Hedge today about how it's going on in the EU too, that you have such severe regulation regimes that independent family and small farm operators cannot possibly compete with the corporate operators who are riding the fucking regulations and who have all this and get all these subsidies while at the same time having these giant legal teams to make sure that every box is checked, every I is dotted, every T is crossed. And these small operators, if they make one mistake on their compliance forms and that sort of thing, they're just out of business. And the same thing is going on with this. And it goes on across the board. It goes on with people who try to start their own media. I mean, good luck trying to start a local FM station if you have different opinions or want to do different programming than everything else that's going on in the corporate media, because you're going to have, or a TV station or anything, because you're going to have to go and get FCC approval for it. And you're going to need a team of lawyers to get it done. And the only way that you're even going to get it done is to basically hold up your right hand and swear to serve Zog.
Were you, I had to step out for a second. Were you making the comparison to alcohol prohibition earlier?
No, I wasn't, but
because that's kind of what happened is it created an industry bottleneck. So yeah. The brewers like Seagram's that were large enough to survive the prohibition, they just moved their operations and they literally dismantled breweries and distilleries and moved them to Canada. And then when prohibition was was terminated, they were literally the only ones standing.
Yeah, that's true. Lee, since you were able to hear what I was saying, do you have any thoughts on the regulation regime, the corporate government collusion on that?
Oh, definitely. I think the whole idea behind all these crazy regulations is something that you see not just in the industries that you mentioned, but also places like banking. Because a while ago, they were trying to cram all these banking regulations through Congress and pass laws that made it almost impossible for small banks and small credit unions to operate. And it allowed these big, huge behemoths from New York City and these other places to be just run rampant over the entire industry. So it's really, when you see all these regulations that are pushed forward, it's because you have these powerful interests. Usually the powerful interests are Jewish interests.
Right.
They're pushing all these regulations because, not because they're looking out for the consumer or the customer, it's because they're trying to eliminate competition. And if you have all these regulations and all these complexities that make it a requirement in order to conduct business, it makes it very difficult for a smaller operation to get off the ground and then compete with the big corporate interest. So that's what you have here.
Well, that's a real good point that you made about banking and the credit unions, because, you know, over the years I was a member of several credit unions, and credit unions were destroyed years ago in every way but name, because what a credit union was is mostly they were organized around workplaces, you know, like if you worked for AT&T, you'd be a member of the local AT&T credit union, and management and union people and all would be members of it. And what it was where you'd have a little bit of money taken out of your check every week that would go straight into a savings account. And all the employees doing that would build a cash fund. And the employees who were members of that credit union would get a vote on who ran the credit union, what the policies of the credit union were. And because you were a stakeholder in it, and because they had the security of the fact that you work for the company and, you know, they can, you know, the any payments that you might make will come right out of your check, they could offer their members very low interest loans with really good terms where they, you know, they could buy their family a home, they could buy cars and things like that. And a decade or so ago, new regulations came out where the companies were told you cannot be an exclusive credit union anymore. It can't be organized around your workplace or any particular group that you're in, because that's discrimination. And so they had to throw open the membership to anybody who wants to be a member. And all these people who don't work for whatever company it was, they're not getting their checks garnished. And all of a sudden you go to your credit union and there's all these people that you don't recognize. And the terms at the credit union are the same terms as you'd get going to Bank of America or whatever. All of a sudden, these people who have been members of the credit union for 30 years can't get a loan.
Yeah, I mean, I think some of that, I could be wrong. It's been a while, but I remember the Dodd-Frank bill that got pushed through after the huge 2008 financial debacle. They used that crisis to push through a lot of these regulations, and it was specifically targeted at these smaller financial operations. There was no doubt about it. So they took a crisis, and they used it to target people they want to put out of business. And they said, oh, yeah, we're trying to protect the consumer, and we're trying to protect people's financial interests. And it was all a bunch of bullshit.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, absolutely. And the fact of the matter is that was an extremely similar situation to what you've got going on with this vaping stuff now, because the fact of the matter was these credit unions had zero to do with that crisis. The crisis was it was basically a government and big bank crisis where the government was telling them, hey, you got to do all these minority loans. You got to give these massive loans to black people, whether they can afford to pay it back or not. And the government will guarantee the loan. And so they give out millions upon millions of bad loans. And surprise, surprise, the loans all go bad, way past the point that even the government said that they would cover them. And the industry is either going to go belly up or we're going to have to borrow $1 trillion and bail out the banks, which, of course, everybody knows what happened.
Yeah, well, you know, it's really interesting that you brought that up, because I remember back in the 2000s, like, literally, they were giving out loans to almost anybody. Like, you could have no income, no job, no assets.
Yeah.
They would give you a loan. And I even remember, like, at that point, I was just getting started with, like, my jobs and career and all that other stuff. And, like, I remember, like, asking for an outrageous amount of money on a credit card just to see if they would give it to me. And they did. Even though there was no way that they should have gave it to me. And they gave me this huge credit line. And that was, like, right before the whole crisis hit. And, it was just that whole 2008 financial crisis was a direct result of this funny money financial usury system that we have that is largely centered off of all these banks that you see that are run by Jews.
Yeah. And the central banks, the central banks tweaking the interest rates and everything. But, like, yeah, just a couple of personal anecdotes about that. One thing that was going on like crazy in the 2000s, and this just shows you how it would creep out of just the banking sector and wreck everything else. I worked for a while selling what they call PPOs for Conseco Insurance, which I believe at the time was the second or third largest insurance company in the United States, that, you know, health insurance company. And it was the insurance end of it was really thriving. And one day they just announced, hey, we're closing up shop. Conseco's completely out of business. I'm like, what? And you go to looking into it, and what was happening was, they got involved in all this easy credit stuff. They got involved investing in these and buying these companies that, you know, anybody who was in the right demographic in the right area at the time saw the signs everywhere, ads everywhere, commercials everywhere, talking about get a brand new double wide trailer on land that you're going to own with no credit or income check. It was, I would see that stuff and I think this has got to be a lie. I mean, how could that be possible? And it turns out it was true, because I had several friends who went and did it. It's like, you go down to you call up the number and they tell you, yeah, come down to the office, and you go down there and sign a bunch of papers and they'd say, yeah, just commit to pay this much a month. And they would put a brand new, huge manufactured house on a piece of land. And, you know, they invested in millions of these things, and surprise, surprise, the loans started going belly up, and this whole other industry, or this whole other giant corporation that was responsible for thousands upon thousands of jobs, goes belly up overnight.
Well, sure. And also, a lot of those mortgages and these loans, they were packaged into these weird financial assets. And, like, you had, like, these mortgage-backed securities. They bundled all these things together, and then the ratings agencies were saying, oh, yeah, these are like highly rated loans, or and AAA or whatever the highest rating is. And really, all the assets that were there, allegedly, were really just a bunch of dog shit. And so finally, the chickens came home to roost with the 2008 financial crisis, because people finally realized that, yeah, these things aren't worth shit, because you had all these people who had been given loans that they couldn't possibly repay. And then when they couldn't repay them, then they started defaulting on the loans, and then the whole thing fell apart. And that's what you had.
Yeah.
Yeah, and the banks then acquire these homes once these people default. So they've basically given out the money, and they get reimbursed or, you know, bailed out by the federal government, and they get to keep the asset.
Yeah, and the people who run these banks and so forth get to keep their jobs and or retire with like $100 million retirement packages or more. But to bring it back around full circle, I mean, what a house of cards we're talking about here. And I had no idea when I started talking about this story how we were going to be able to connect this to so many things. But what a house of cards we've got in every aspect of our society. Everything is so fake. Everything is so propped up. Everything is so dependent on the people being dumb and not knowing what's going on. Big corporate interests colluding with big government interests and the media propping it all up. What am I missing, Lee? Is there another arm of something? I mean, of course, all this is Jewish, but is there something I'm missing about this?
No, I mean, I think, well, obviously, a lot of the problems that we have here is directly a result of the fact that Jews are running all these organizations and institutions. But yeah, I mean, our entire society is extremely fake. I mean, we have a fake media, we have a fake currency system. I mean, the entertainment, the stuff we see from Hollywood, the music, I mean, it's just so artificial, and it's garbage, a lot of it. There's no substance behind anything.
Yeah.
And that's just the result of the Jewish infestation that we have in our country.
Right. But as I said, I was going to bring it back around to what we got started talking about. And the initial thrust of this topic was that heroin and meth are okay in Washington while they're getting rid of the flavored vaping products. And right. Just look at how, now, regardless, even if the vape was as bad for you as they're trying to claim that it is, and I would say that they're not even claiming that it's as bad as tobacco use, but, you know, cigarette smoking. But let's just say it was as bad as cigarette smoking. It is in no way the type of impediment to your quality of life as a person living in a place like King County, where, or Washington State in general, if you live in a metropolis there, to all these heroin and meth addicts and mental patients running around all over the place because of people like Inslee and the Seattle city leaders and so forth, these policies that they have not to prosecute these people. And I think, and this probably goes for me too, even though I research this stuff and I see all kinds of video and read all kinds of news reports about it and everything. But hey, farmer, it's a type of thing that people who haven't actually experienced it probably wouldn't believe, isn't it? How bad it is.
No, the decline, it's just amazing. I mean, it's the other day I was in Seattle for just an hour, and there are crazy people everywhere. Like people talking to themselves and stumbling around, people sleeping in doorways. The bus stops were just like lounges for junkies and lunatics. But then again, you have like these super, super affluent areas, like in some cases, they're actual islands, which is where people who can afford to isolate themselves from the decay go and live.
Yeah. And I mean, there's like tent cities that, and we've had these tent cities forever. I remember when I first moved to Dallas in the late 80s, they had these tent cities that the police would go break up every once in a while. Of course, the media would go nuts about it, but like they were hidden under overpasses and things. But now these tent cities are right out on the sidewalks downtown and stuff, right?
Oh, they're absolutely everywhere. They're like dust bunnies, you know, anywhere any overpass, any area that is not, you know, covered with tires, like people aren't actually driving through it, they occupy. Fucking the Coast Guard headquarters, the Coast Guard depot or dock or whatever, in their parking lot, there are RVs of homeless people. And that's another thing, is you see just miles and miles of these dilapidated, shambolic recreational vehicles that these people live in. If they're not, if you're a high roller and you're homeless, you live in an RV. And they're in the parking lot of the fucking Coast Guard. And I asked a dude about it. I'm like, what's going on? It's like, oh, well, there's a homeless shelter down the street. It's like, well, what does that have to do with it? You know, it's a branch of the military, and you're just allowing these people to squat on your property. There's definitely a policy that they're not allowed to handle these people.
Yeah. Well, if they do, I mean, if they go out and handle these people, they would likely be charged by the local authorities individually with crimes and such, wouldn't you think?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. That documentary, Seattle is Dying, they interview this police officer, and that he decided to retire and leave the, I think he moved to Eastern Washington because he was getting such a raft of shit from these young, you know, Burger King Kids Club type superiors.
Yeah.
Who were telling him that he wasn't allowed to enforce the law. So,
yeah. Well, these people know exactly what they're doing with these policies and all, and it goes beyond ideology. It's like it's an attempt to deliberately destroy the culture that we have. Lee, address that. This, you know, people like conservatives and all, they're always nonplussed at this stuff. And they're like, "What's wrong with these liberals? They're so stupid." But it's not stupid, is it? It's like, it's a deliberate thing.
Well, I think that's the only explanation there is. I mean, because when you look at a lot of these cities, I mean, Seattle is just one example, but you got San Francisco, you got Los Angeles. There's even a story that just came out about the problems they're having in Miami with all these homeless third world vibrants that are everywhere. And these are problems that should be fairly easy to solve. All you have to do is just tell the police, look, enforce the law, get these people out of here. And then also you bolster the mental health facilities, which of course they got rid of back in, I forget exactly when, but probably like the 1970s is when they really started to get rid of these facilities. But since you don't have those facilities, you got these crazy people who shouldn't be walking anywhere in public. And they're just allowed to be roaming around, attacking people, assaulting people. This is a problem. And I saw this firsthand when I was in San Francisco a few years back. The main tourist areas of that city, places like Union Square and others, there were literal homeless junkies and crazy people just attacking random people. And there were no police. There was nobody doing anything about it. And I literally, like San Francisco, I've been in third world countries, and I felt less safe in San Francisco than I have in third world countries. And that's, I had to actually carry a box cutter around.
Yeah,
just to make sure, just to have something to defend myself,
right,
from these crazy fucking people. So yeah, this whole thing is, it's obviously deliberate because the solutions to these problems are just so obvious and so transparent
and simple. You know, the thing is, all this stuff got started when and San Francisco is a perfect example of this. They decided and publicly announced, we're going to stop enforcing what they call quality of life ordinances, like no shitting on the sidewalk, no shooting up in public, no running around with your dick hanging out, you know, that kind of thing. And and immediately these problems started. But just to back up what you're saying about that those particular areas of San Francisco, when, you know, this mayor that they've got now, who is a vibrant, brave person of color, female mayor that they've got now, When she got elected, her first day in office, to, you know, act like, oh, you know, we're going to look at doing something about this, she went and took a tour of these areas in downtown San Francisco, and she had the police chief in his full tropical republic dictator looking uniform and everything, and all these cops surrounding him and all like that. And they're walking down the sidewalk, and right there on the news video, they walk right past the guy who's standing, who, like, the mayor and the police chief come within a foot of him, and he's just standing there, standing up, not even attempting to hide, and shooting up heroin into his arm for everybody to see. And they walk past it and act like they don't see it. And it's right there on the news video, and it's like 9 o'clock in the morning. And I mean, if these people are going to stand there and do this crap right in front of the police chief and the mayor and the city council, who are surrounded by a squad of, I mean, obviously, whoever are, you know, their most Praetorian guard style cops to keep the city government safe while they're out there. And not only that, these people are having to step over shit, and the shit in San Francisco is so bad now, and I'm sure it's this way in a lot of these cities, that they have an app where that people who live in San Francisco download the app, and when they run across human shit, they, you know, they it, like it's hooked up to their GPS and everything, and they hit a button on the app to report the human shit right wherever they are. And you go look at that app at any given time, and like it makes a brown, I mean, how hilarious. It makes a brown dot on the map for where the human shit is that they need the city to come clean up. And like the whole map just turns brown.
Yeah, they have like, I think they have the shit patrol, the poop patrol.
Yeah.
And they actually, yeah, they literally pay people like six figures to go around and clean up people's shit.
Well, I mean, you'd have to pay me that much.
Yeah, they recently spent $20 million cleaning up needles and human feces from the street, and apparently it didn't do anything.
Right. I mean, it just stops it from growing into some kind of a dump pile that rises to the heavens. That's all that it does.
It's like you said, you know, they don't want to address the root issues, you know, the core where the rot is coming from. They'd rather just sort of like come up with really stupid and trendy sort of ways to deal with it, like a fucking app. Like, if you see some shit, take a picture of it and let us know.
How about if you see somebody taking a shit, the cops arrest them? How about that?
That would make sense.
It's like, hey, wait a minute. We're not animals here. I mean, we're talking about places where a decade ago, if somebody's out walking their chihuahua and the chihuahua took a shit on the sidewalk and they didn't pick it up, they'd get a massive fine. Mm-hmm. But a human can pull his pants down, expose his ass and his genitalia to everybody, take a massive dump right in front of everybody, and then lay down 3 feet from it, shoot up heroin, go to sleep, and he's not bothered at all. And the cops can sit there and watch and be like, hey, buddy, we'd rather you don't do that, but I mean, okay, it's your life.
Well, it's also, I mean, never mind the societal problems, but also just the sanitary conditions that this creates and the potential health problems. Because if you got all this shit that's everywhere, this is bound to spread diseases that we eradicated a long time ago. And I think I was reading a bunch of stories about how like these crazy diseases have been coming back that we long since got rid of, but because of all these third world populations coming in, they're coming into these cities and doing these things, they're coming back. So this is a health crisis just waiting to explode.
Yeah, I mean, a few months ago, it was a big story, well, locally, the national media doesn't want to cover this stuff. Because if you just go on any given day and you go digging through the local news of big cities all over, everywhere from New York to Baltimore to Houston to Chicago to the West Coast cities, Los Angeles, San Francisco, Seattle, wherever. And you look at the quality of life stories going on, it's like we have completely lost control of the cities. And it's this massive plague of disorder that if the local media was, I'm not the local, but the national media was covering this as one coherent story, Americans would be so shocked and so afraid that they, whether they're right, left, whatever, the mass of Americans would demand that something be done about this immediately before we descend into complete fucking chaos. I mean, these homeless people, these drug addicts, the violent gangs, minorities who don't pay into things and feel like everything public belongs to them have completely taken over public spaces in all of our cities and rendered them unusable to the people who are paying for them. Not only unusable, but dangerous and deadly. I mean, just look at how many people get thrown onto the subway tracks every month by some homeless person or some black person or whatever. And, but it's all covered as like some local issue, and everybody thinks, well, it's just us, you know, or whatever.
Well, and, I think the story you were alluding to typhus, the outbreak of typhus in LA County.
Yes. Yes. That was the story. And yeah, I mean, this is definitely a national problem because there's so many cities that are impacted by this. And I think the only person who actually talked about it in the media, like the mainstream cable media was Tucker Carlson. He did a few pieces on how the cities in California were becoming almost unlivable because of all the homeless that were wandering around, all the issues that they had that we just discussed.
Yeah, well, he only says that because he's a white supremacist.
Right, right. He's a neo-Nazi and a Russian plant, I'm sure. So
yeah.
So, yeah.
Well, I tell you what, guys. We have been at this for an hour, nearly. So it's time for us to take a break. And when we come back, we've got some stuff to talk about all these Russian plants all over the place and more stuff. So let me do some plugs real quick. If you are a young white American male who's age 18 years of age or older, you should consider applying for membership with Stormer Book Club. Come do some good, productive, legal, pro-white activism. For more information on applying for membership with Stormer Book Club, email stormerbookclubs@airmail.cc. The TKR White Wednesday live stream happens on our DLive channel, which is linked here in the article, every Wednesday at 9 Eastern, 8 Central, 6 Pacific. The TKR Live Friday Night Special happens on that same channel every Friday at 10 Eastern, 9 Central, 7 Pacific. And Hate Farmer, you want to plug your channel real quick?
Yeah, I do an irregular podcast with the GF. It's called Duxland Uberalis. If you want to join us on Saturday nights at DLive, then maybe there will be a link to that in the description. But it's just some cozy chatting with the GF, and we discuss relationship stuff and play some music. And generally we stream about 11 or 12 at night Pacific time.
All right. And of course, our guest Lee Rogers is both a feature writer at dailystormer.name and the owner, administrator, publisher, editor-in-chief, and all that good stuff, and head writer of infostormer.com, which is a great website. So go check out infostormer.com. We'll have that linked right here in the article as well. And while you're there, go ahead and sign up for the forum. Why not? It's a nice little forum, good community, and registration is open. And while you're over there every day looking at infostormer.com, Lee has a contribute link on the front page so you can support infostormer.com. So don't be stingy with your Bitcoins and your Moneros. That's what you take, right, Lee? Bitcoin and Monero?
It's the only thing I can take because right. The Jews banned me from every financial payment processor known to man.
Right.
So, yeah.
Yeah, well, that was probably part of the Dodd-Frank bill, too. No neo-Nazis allowed to get paid for their work. But not that we are actually neo-Nazis. I mean, we don't even know what that is. No. It's a Hollywood thing. And there are several ways to contribute to the Crypto Report as well. If you enjoy our content, please feel free to do so. But if you're not able to do so, we're happy to provide both this podcast and the live streams for free. And our motto here at the Crypto Report, as always, no paywalls or bad intentions. If you want to contact us, our email is tkr@airmail.cc. And if you want some really great merch, we have a TKR merch store, which is also linked right here in this article. So I guess it's time to go to break. We'll be back right after this.
You're listening to The Crypto Report. We'll be right back after this break.
Hello and welcome to Literacy Weekly, brought to you by your local Stormer Book Club. This week's passage is from How Hitler Defied the Bankers from our friends at Hufflandia. Many people take joy in saying Wall Street and Jewish bankers financed Hitler. There is plenty of documented evidence that Wall Street and Jewish bankers did indeed help finance Hitler at first,
partly because it allowed the bankers to get rich, and partly in order to control Stalin. However, when Germany broke free of the bankers declared a world war against Germany. When Hitler came to power, Germany was hopelessly broke. The Treaty of Versailles had imposed crushing reparations on the German people, demanding that Germans repay every nation's cost of the war. The cost totaled 3 times the value of all the property in Germany. Private currency speculators caused the German mark to plummet, precipitating one of the worst runaway inflations in modern times. A wheelbarrow full of 100 billion mark banknotes could not buy a loaf of bread. The national treasury was empty. Countless homes and farms were lost to speculators and to private Jewish-controlled banks. Germany had no choice but to succumb to debt slavery under international, mainly Jewish, bankers until 1933, when the National Socialists came to power. At that point, the German government thwarted the international banking cartels by issuing its own money. World Jewry responded by declaring a global boycott against Germany. Hitler began a national credit program by devising a plan of public works that included flood control, repair of public buildings and private residences, and construction of new roads, bridges, canals, and port facilities. All these were paid for with money that no longer came from the private international bankers. The projected cost of these various programs was fixed at 1 billion units of the national currency. To pay for this, the German government, not the international bankers, issued bills of exchange called Labor Treasury Certificates. In this way, the National Socialists put millions of people to work and paid them with Treasury certificates. Within 2 years, the unemployment problem had been solved, and Germany was back on its feet. It had a solid, stable currency with no debt and no inflation, at a time when millions of people in the United States and other Western countries, controlled by international bankers, were still out of work. Within 5 years, Germany went from the poorest nation in Europe to the richest. Germany even managed to restore foreign trade, despite the international bankers' denial of foreign credit to Germany, and despite the global boycott by Jewish-owned industries. Germany succeeded in this by exchanging equipment and commodities directly with other countries, using a barter system that cut the bankers out of the picture. Germany flourished, since barter eliminates national debt and trade deficits. This economic freedom made Hitler extremely popular with the German people. Germany was rescued from English economic theory, which says that all currency must be borrowed against the gold owned by a private and secretive banking cartel, such as the Federal Reserve or the Central Bank of Europe. Canadian researcher Dr. Henry Macau, who is Jewish himself, says the main reason why the bankers arranged for a world war against Germany was that Hitler sidestepped the bankers by creating his own money, thereby freeing the German people. Worse, this freedom and prosperity threatened to spread to other nations. Hitler had to be stopped. It took the entire capitalist and communist world to destroy the German Revolution and bring Europe back under the heel of the bankers. When a government issues currency in carefully measured ways, it causes supply and demand to increase together, leaving prices unaffected. Hence, there is no inflation, no debt, no unemployment, and no need for income taxes. Naturally, this terrifies the bankers, since it eliminates their powers. It also terrifies Jews, since their control of banking allows them to buy the media, the government, and everything else. Okay, that was from How Hitler Defied the Bankers. Thanks, Hoff. We'll be right back.
Welcome back to the Crypto Report.
Yeah. Welcome back to the Crypto Report. We are here for a big second half. What a great break that was, huh, guys?
Yeah, I enjoyed it.
Yeah. Yeah,
very good stuff.
That was good. And I guess just a bit of luck or synchronicity or whatever you want to call it, that the topic that the Literacy Weekly was this week, huh?
It's almost like it was coordinated.
Yeah, and it wasn't, actually. Not that I can't, but the Literacy Weekly stuff, I never really offer up any input about, you know, what I want this week or whatever. I I get them, and they're generally, if not always, good. So, you know, I just take, and whatever one's ready for me this week, I throw it in there. And, I mean, I knew what it was before the show started, but there was absolutely no coordination between the show material this week and you know, the How Hitler Defeated the Bankers Literacy Weekly. It just kind of happened that way. And believe it, the whole first half, I mean, I had plans for it, but they weren't what came out. You know, we kind of used that one article about Seattle as a springboard to talk about the whole, all these problems with the international Jewish system and the leftist, communist, socialist, whatever you want to call it, regime that is absolutely wrecking our society. But let's move on. We've got Leon, which gives us a great opportunity to depend even more heavily, which is a good thing this week, because I haven't done as much research as I should have this week doing prep, but the infostormer.com is a great place to go and steal all your prep because we cover such good topics. I want to start off with this article that Lee posted Saturday, the 19th. The headline, Tulsi Gabbard said to be Russian agent and a white supremacist. It says, Twitter has gone nuts today, talking about how Dr. David Duke said supportive things about Tulsi Gabbard. And whenever Dr. Duke says something nice about someone, the retards on the political left automatically go crazy, ranting about how that person is a racist, neo-Nazi, and a white supremacist. Here's some of the insanity that's being posted. This one is from some big Twitter account called Angry Staffer. It says, Tulsi gets David Duke's endorsement the same day she goes on Tucker Carlson's show to attack Hillary Clinton. Any more questions? And then some front hole named Victoria Brownsworth, or Brownworth, excuse me, Victoria at VabVox, says, I've covered politics for 30 years. Never has there been a Democratic presidential candidate endorsed by brutal dictators and alt-right neo-Nazis and KKK. Hashtag I am Tulsi Gabbard is endorsed by Bashar al-Assad. Are we sure he has endorsed her even? I mean, she basically has just said, there's no reason for us to, like, nuke Syria.
Yeah. That nigger's on Twitter all day.
Yeah.
Yeah. She just doesn't want to go to war with them.
Right.
So I'm not sure that's really an endorsement.
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to go to war with Canada either, but that doesn't mean I endorse Canada. David Duke, Richard Spencer, Steve Bannon, Tucker Carlson, so is Trump. Now, how is Trump endorsing Tulsi Gabbard? I mean, isn't he running against whoever the Democratic nominee eventually will be? And I thought that Trump has been endorsing either Biden or Pocahontas to be the nominee because they'd be so easy for him to beat in the debates and such. I mean, he's been openly, literally endorsing them, saying, please, please, please nominate one of these people.
Yeah, the tweet lacks logic, I would say. Wasn't a whole lot of thought put into it.
Yeah.
Well, just like the clip you played at the beginning of the show, this is she's been covering politics for 30 years. Apparently, she doesn't know what the fuck she's doing. But this is a reason why women should just not not be involved in politics.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And then there's, we have this vibrant black individual. Let me read you his bio on Twitter. His name is Frederick Joseph. He's a checkmark. He's got 38.2K followers. He's author of The Black Friend, which apparently is coming out in 2021. Hashtag Forbes under 30 marketer, founder of WHS.org, which is We Have Stories, a 501k3 marketing agency founded on supporting marginalized creators and businesses. In other words, black. He has an MBA. He's a humanitarian. And he made a little video with his
recent press.
Wait, let me hold off there for a second. What it says in his tweet is, beyond the endorsements of David Duke, Steve Bannon, and others, Tulsi Gabbard had, let me read it. He's a black guy. Let me read it properly. Beyond the endorsements of David Duke, Steve Bannon, and others, Tulsi Gabbard done be spending months gaslighting the American people with a smear campaign against other candidates. Hashtag Tulsi is a Russian asset. Okay, let's hear what this obviously high IQ individual has to say.
With all the recent press and news about Tulsi Gabbard and her campaign, I think that it's absolutely important to make the point that Tulsi Gabbard has been gaslighting America for months.
Now, wait a minute. She's been gaslighting America. Now, let's talk about this term for a second. First of all, Tulsi Gabbard doesn't have the power to gaslight America, because gaslighting, let me pull up an exact definition of it here. Okay, here is what Wikipedia has to say. Gaslighting is a form of psychological manipulation in which a person seeks to sow seeds of doubt in a targeted individual or in members of a targeted group, making them question their own memory, perception, and sanity, using persistent denial, misdirection, contradiction, and lying. Gaslighting involves attempts to destabilize the victim and delegitimize the victim's beliefs. Instances may range from the denial by an abuser that previous abusive incidents ever occurred to the staging of bizarre events by the abuser with the intention of disorienting the victim. Now, I do believe that the American public, just to be specific here, certainly not only the American public, is has been subjected to an intense campaign of gaslighting, but not by Tulsi Gabbard, who like I said, doesn't have the power to do this to the American public. There's one group of people who absolutely have the power to do a coordinated gaslighting campaign and has been doing so for many, many decades, for much longer than anyone participating in or listening to this show has been alive. And it's not some single-digit polling Democrat candidate who is apparently the only one on the stage, except maybe Yang, but who cares, that's anti total regime change war in every country where we can roll the military in there and do it. And as far as I mean, just look at this definition. The government has also been doing it. The media has been doing it, and the government's been doing it. The intention of disorienting the victim, making them question their own memory, perception, and sanity. Attempts to destabilize the victim and delegitimize the victim's beliefs. Denial that previous incidents ever occurred. Staging of bizarre incidents. Can you guys think of any bizarre incidents that may have been staged by the government or the media?
How about September 11th?
Yeah, 9/11 comes right to fucking mind, doesn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. Russiagate.
Yeah, Russiagate. There you go. I mean, look, this has been the whole Russiagate thing has been a sustained campaign of gaslighting that got started by the Hillary Clinton campaign that paid for the whole Russiagate dossier that has been carried on in a coordinated manner by the media and the Democrats who are in control of all these committees in the Congress now that are pushing every weird conspiracy theory that they can manufacture to gaslight the American people. You know, people like Jim Acosta, who wrote a book about the president that, you know, thank God almost no one's bought or much less read, but that's called Enemy of the People. Now, did anybody write, I mean, I don't recall people in the mainstream media writing books about Obama, who was doing things to fundamentally dismantle our society and who literally was an enemy of the people, you know, who would go and do press conferences where he was purposely causing race riots to break out all over the United States, knowing that he was doing this and doing it repeatedly, and who was doing things like selling guns to cartels in Mexico through the ATF and then trying to prosecute people who blew the whistle on it, and just thousands upon thousands of other things, all these gaslighting campaigns. But this checkmark Negro here wants to tell you that Tulsi Gabbard has been gaslighting people. Let's continue. Let's hear it.
I think that it's absolutely important to make the point that Tulsi Gabbard has been gaslighting America for months. Her entire campaign has been used as a stage to gaslight people around key issues, around important candidates, and the future of the country. Whether she's a Russian plant, assets, so on and so forth, I can't say. We probably never will be able to say. But
and yet he straight up said that in his tweet. His tweet ended with hashtag Tulsi is a Russian asset. Let's continue.
We do know that she's been supported and endorsed by people such as David Duke, Steve Bannon, Meghan McCain, Tucker Carlson, and generally just people on the right and in positions who don't share democratic values.
Okay. This brother here is purposely involved in a gaslighting campaign. There's nothing more obviously a gaslighting campaign than to name off these people who have said, hey, you know, Tulsi Gabbard was right about something she said, or hey, you know, CNN won't allow Tulsi Gabbard on, so I'll bring her on the Tucker Carlson show. Or, hey, I'm the leader of a country in the Middle East, and I'm glad there's somebody saying, let's don't kill everybody in my country. That these are endorsements, that she's endorsed by the KKK, that she's endorsed by the president, that she's endorsed by David Duke and all this thing. And for one thing, you know, can anybody help it who endorses them?
Right.
No, they can't. Trump dealt with the same thing during the 2016 campaign. With David Duke, I remember there was a huge thing where David Duke and actually a bunch of other people, and they made a big deal out of Trump not denouncing David Duke because he endorsed him or said nice things about him. I mean, as if it was his fault that David Duke endorse him in the first place. He can't control that. But they made a big stink out of it. And they're doing the same thing with Tulsi Gabbard.
Yeah. And that one thing, it's weird how, you know, well, it's not weird. It's obvious why. But it's worth pointing out because some people in this thread, and we'll be going through this because this brother got absolutely ratioed in this thread. But if what David Duke has said about Tulsi Gabbard was an endorsement of her, then he has definitely endorsed Ilhan Omar. And nobody's saying a word about that because she has all the right positions. You know, she doesn't talk about stopping the wars in the Middle East and all that. She just wants to bring down white America, you know, so she's all good. But let's continue with the brother here for a second.
Community values and values for the future of this country.
What are these community values and the values of the future for this country that she's okay? So we want to stop sending all our troops to the Middle East. We want to stop having regime change everywhere. I'm not all that familiar with all her policy, but it seems like, oh, and, you know, horror of horrors. At the last debate that I saw her in, she said things like, you know, let's stop smearing the other side and all this. You know, let's talk about our issues. I mean, horror of horrors. Let's try to stop the division in the country and all like that, which, of course, is not going to happen.
Outside of the MAGA and Republican regime, though she's told a lot of these people that she doesn't want their endorsement, there's a reason strategically why they would see her as someone to stand behind. That said, some of those reasons are apparent even in her Democratic debate appearances. When she gets on that stage, she never shares a true vision for America. She never shares concepts for how she's going to make things better for people. She spends the time attacking candidates and calling them out for what she feels they aren't doing or how she feels they aren't allowed.
Well, what are you supposed to do in the debate?
You're supposed to all, like, rephrase and come up with different formulations of the establishment policy.
You're all supposed to be attacking white people, straight people, people who are against cutting off their children's penises and breasts, and Trump. You're not supposed to talk about what the other candidates, what your differences with them are. You're all supposed to, in unison, attack all the same people on the other side without talking about any real issues, other than, you know, crap like reparations for blacks, enforced hormone replacement therapy for all kindergarten children, and free college for everybody.
How we can roll back the First Amendment.
How we can roll back the First and Second Amendment. Why? So that the cigar-smoking backroom bosses that control the DNC can wait until the last minute and pick whoever it is they think has the best chance to win, instead of letting the people choose, which they certainly didn't let the people choose last time, did they, Lee?
Well, no, the entire election was rigged in favor of Hillary Clinton, and this was admitted in emails that were leaked. And you had people like Donna Brazile, who was actually giving debate questions to Hillary Clinton's campaign when she was working at CNN. And it's pretty funny to see how Fox News hired her. That's a whole other story. But yeah, I mean, the 2016 campaign was totally rigged for Hillary Clinton. They screwed Bernie Sanders, and they stacked the deck against him. And then Bernie just says, "Oh yeah, I want all of you to support Hillary," even though they completely screwed him in the entire race. It was a total sham from the start.
And that's what people like this guy. And this is obviously like a really coordinated thing, because all of a sudden, all at the same time on the same day, Hillary Clinton came out and brought up this old crap that got started with some article that was written in February. I can't remember where. It's in one of these tweets, not this guy's. But and they're all parroting these talking points that she is a Russian asset who, if she doesn't get the nomination, is going to run third party to make sure and draw votes away from whoever is the Democrat. You know, they still blame Jill Stein, who got like 0.something% of the vote for Trump's victory. Or it's one of the things that they blame for it. They blame that, and they blame the Electoral College that they say we've got to get rid of, and so on and so on. But, you know, they're claiming that this is some plan she has, but no, this is a plan that they have already to contest the results of an election that they're almost certain they're going to lose no matter who they run. It's a plan that they have to contest that election, to contest the validity of that election. They are already, in terms of gaslighting, they are already, in a coordinated effort, are gaslighting the American people into not trusting the results of an election that hasn't even happened yet.
Yeah, if the establishment doesn't get the results it wants, it's undemocratic.
Well, that's how democracy works. If the people who are really running things, if the oligarchy doesn't get what it wants, then you just force the people to do it over and do it over and do it over. And if you don't get the results you want that way, then you get a judge to change everything for you.
Well, look at the Brexit fiasco. That's a perfect example.
Yeah.
We're 3 years after they voted to leave the European Union, and they're doing everything in their power to make sure it doesn't happen. And they're trying to get a re-vote to take place. I mean, it's such a clusterfuck.
And yeah,
that's what democracy is all about. It's a bunch of bullshit.
And right here at home, a couple of great examples of this are immigration and anal marriage. You know, like, what few chances that anybody in America has ever had to vote on anything about immigration, like, mostly it was in Arizona. You know, they had several elections where they had, they were able to vote on some new laws to give the state more power to deal with illegal immigration and everything. And, you know, they got threatened. So they'd have these elections. They had them two or three times. And they still never got the result they wanted, which was for the people to vote down the state having any authority or power to do anything about all the illegal immigration that's destroying the state. And so they had judges step in and complete the federal judges step in and invalidate it. Say, no. The state has no authority to protect itself when this is all the purview of the federal government, who says you will be flooded by third world brown people. And another, you know, California even voted against anal marriage, and they had a judge step in and invalidate the results of that. And anal marriage is something that the majority of Americans absolutely did not support. And all these states wouldn't go along with it. And so the Supreme Court says, no, you got to have anal marriage. It's a constitutional right. And so now we have man on man and woman on woman marriage all over the United States, with the people of the United States not wanting it. And the odd thing is, now you've got these grifters like Charlie Kirk and so forth. You know, the people who are allowed to be the right-wing opposition on big platforms like Twitter and so forth, who are all about how awesome masturbating in the other men's anuses is, and that they should be allowed to get married because they masturbate into each other's anuses. But let's continue with this brother before we riff off into the controlled opposition, because because this is the controlled mainstream right here. This brother is emblematic of it.
Never shares a true vision for America. She never shares concepts for how she's going to make things better for people. She spends the time attacking candidates and calling them out for what she feels they aren't doing or how she feels they aren't aligned with visions that are typically right wing. She has nothing in her pocket except for...
Yeah, because anti-war is so right-wing. Let's continue.
The ability to attack others. It sounds like she's not working for the Democratic Party, frankly.
This is what's known as a Freudian slip. She's not working for the Democrat Party. She's out there telling the truth instead of saying as she sees it. And don't get me wrong, I'm not this giant supporter of Tulsi. I'm just saying among those Democrats, she's the best one, and she's probably the only truly anti-war candidate out there. But she's not working for the Democrat Party. Let's let this Negro finish.
That said, she's also a homophobe. And I think that that's extremely important to note, because those are not the values and direction of the party that she claims to belong to. All that to say, take a long look at her as not only a candidate but a public figure, because she's bad for America and she's bad for politics in this moment.
Oh my. Well, let's see what this brother with the tens of thousands of followers, you'd think that like he'd get a lot of support, right? The very first response from somebody named Jackie Rock says, I'm Tulsi is anti-regime change, end U.S. imperialist wars in seven sovereign countries, illegally invaded under Obama and Clinton. We're not gaslit if speaking out against bombing hospitals in Afghanistan or helping out troops or helping our troops fight PTSD at home. And this person posts a bunch of pictures of the destruction that we've done in those countries. And then Leslie Lee III, a vibrant black individual, replies, he likes those pictures of destruction. Reminds him of the fight scenes in Avengers. and so Mr. Joseph felt that he had to jump in here and try to clean it up. And he says, no, I just think that Tulsi is a con artist who has duped a bunch of simpletons like yourself. I'd suggest getting your head out of your ass and actually learning something. Now, this is emblematic of the whole gaslighting thing, because did you hear any actual issues raised in that? It was all these vague attacks claiming that she doesn't do this and she doesn't do that. But there were no issues brought up. And so to that, somebody, Nyan Padrai, another blue chick, says, this is what woke people do. Attack when someone questions their point of view. Get the fuck out of here. And it just goes on and on. And it's mostly black people ratioing this guy. And, you know, they're putting in all the gifs of black people rolling their eyes. Here's some LOL. I just wasted 2 minutes of my life watching this guy's video. And they, of course, they've got a few people jumping in there to defend Hillary, but it's just over and over and over. And it, here it is. Somebody who calls himself Huel Babineau did nothing wrong. Just simply quote tweets without, any commentary on it. A tweet from David Duke. Ilhan Omar is now the most important member of the U.S. Congress. That's a tweet from David Duke. So why aren't they all piling on her? But it's basically a giant love fest from black people. Apparently it's black people who follow this guy. And it's a giant love fest from black people for Tulsi Gabbard. But unfortunately, in those other two tweets, they were also by really big people. It's all this outpouring of support for Hillary and denunciation of Tulsi. But the weird thing is that so many of them look like either bots or paid accounts. And they're all accusing anybody who supports Gabbard of being a bot or a paid account.
It's the whole Russian bot phenomenon all over again.
Yeah, anyone I disagree with is a Russian bot or colluding with Russia.
Well, that's the thing, too, is like they're just these vague denouncements, because when you get down to issues, he would have to be pinned down and he'd have to explain why all this intervention, which began after 9/11 under the Bush administration, why he supports those policies, why he thinks these wars are great. You know, he doesn't want to get pinned down and have to actually come up with a reason why those things are good or bad. So, yeah, I mean, he's literally just gaslighting people.
Yeah, yeah. But, you know, this is democracy on steroids. You've got all these shadowy interests that behind the scenes are so organized and so well-funded, who can just rush all this AstroTurf shit out there at any given moment. It's like the, you know, some talking point, some narrative, they come up with it and immediately you have not only the entire mainstream media pushing it, but all these people who are allegedly just, you know, folks who think for themselves getting out there. And I think it shows you how badly they're scared of this. And it's, you know, the history of this is so telling that now they want to accuse anybody that is against all these regime change wars of either being a Russian or colluding with Russia, because it all sounds so much like the 80s when they do this. And, you know, going back, if you want to talk about like real original conservatism, you know, like go back to Taft and see what was going on with there. The real conservatives were always against these regime change wars and this giant, and having some kind of a giant military that you could just project force and troops on the ground all over the world at any given time. Because at the end of World War II, the biggest threat was nuclear war. And so the plan was to build a nuclear response that is so overwhelming that it'll keep nuclear war from starting. And it worked. You know, by the 90s, the Soviet Union had crumbled. And we promised Gorbachev before that happened that there would be all this de-escalation and everything. And instead, what happened was instead of being able to save all the money, all the treasure that we had expended for decades to defeat the communist enemy, which is exactly what happened. We just spent and spent and spent, and they had to spend and spend and spend in this arms race and all until one or the other was going to collapse. But instead of doing what we should have done, which would have been to pare back our forces, make sure that we had the best home defense, national defense in the world, we allowed this neocon agenda to move in where we're going to not only build this force that's capable of having two or three wars at once, but we're going to actually have like seven all the time. And we are expending, according to what they tell us right now, $750 billion a year on the military in these expeditions all over the world that don't benefit a single American and are absolutely perniciously against our interests, when we could be spending $250 million and having the best national defense that anyone in the history of the world has ever seen. That's $500 billion that we could either use to draw down on the deficit or to spend on programs here at home to try to combat this structural rot that we talked about throughout the entire first hour. What do you think, Lee?
Yeah, 100%. I mean, how many trillions of dollars have we spent over the past several decades on all these stupid wars, which have not benefited our country at all, but have been a primary benefit to Jews and Israel in particular, plus all these other interests that
the military-industrial complex.
You took the words right out of my mouth. I mean, you had all these defense contractors and weapons makers that made out like bandits over the past few years. I mean, you got companies like Halliburton that Dick Cheney was involved in. I mean, the list goes on and on. There are all these interests that benefited off of these endless wars, with the exception of the American people. And meanwhile, we're going across the world and doing all these wars. We've had open borders, and it hasn't been until Trump got elected that this became like a real issue that somebody's at least trying to deal with in some capacity. Before that, it was like, I remember during the 2000s, it was starting to become a really, really big problem. And I think W did like some sort of photo op down on the border where he was riding around on a vehicle. And that was it. That was like the extent of how they addressed it. They didn't really do anything. So, yeah, it's unbelievable the amount of money that we've spent on all this shit. And it has not benefited America at all. It's been for the benefit of all these interests I just mentioned.
Yeah.
It's terrible.
And there's not a single case that we can point to where we have actually achieved our stated aims. You know, even if, you know, you thought these wars and interventions were justified, there's not a single case where we actually succeeded.
There's never any defined goals either. Like this war on terror that's been defined, it's like, okay, well, how do you define victory? You can't, because you can always say that like something is terrorism and, well, we still have to have this war. We have to have troops stationed over here.
If we leave Syria, ISIS will come back. We saw an ISIS flag on satellite the other day.
Exactly.
But let's go back about, I guess, nearly 70 years, and hear a warning about all this. Let's take a listen. Well, if it'll start.
I come to you with a message of leave-taking and farewell.
This speech did not get very much attention. When a new president is coming...
Christ, I just want the raw thing. Why won't YouTube give me the raw thing? These YouTube results, the titles are so misleading. Let's try this one.
So is the very structure of our society. In the councils of government, we must guard against the acquisition of unwarranted influence, whether sought or unsought, by the military-industrial complex. The potential for the disastrous rise of misplaced power exists and will persist. We must never let the weight of this combination endanger our liberties or democratic processes. We should take nothing for granted. Only an alert and knowledgeable citizenry can compel the proper meshing of the huge industrial and military machinery of defense with our peaceful methods and goals, so that security and liberty may prosper together.
Well, I don't think that we have had the alert and knowledgeable citizenry that was required, as Eisenhower stated. That was from 1961. That was Eisenhower's farewell address. And he'd been president for 8 years, and he'd also been the Allied commander of World War II. So this was a man who knew exactly what he was talking about when he talked about the military-industrial complex. And, I mean, how much more of an accurate... Well, it wasn't a prediction, it was a warning. But how much more of an accurate warning could the American people ask for? And I don't blame the American people so much for not having been as vigilant. I mean, sure, the blame does lie with them as a responsibility. But the blame for this goes to this media that has been gaslighting them for all these decades.
Yeah, I mean, I would say that the media is one of the biggest problems that we have. And you know, we were talking about this on the stream the other night. I think what we do here on shows like this and running websites and things of that nature is so vitally important because of the fact that we have this industry that's being financed by these subversive Jews, and they have billions upon billions of dollars at their disposal to promote and project all these lies to bamboozle the American people into going along with the agendas that suit their interests instead of our own interest. It's absolutely crazy the amount of power that they have, and I would really hope that something substantive can be done about these organizations. I think you mentioned it on the stream, bring back the Committee on Un-American Activities or something in Congress to investigate these people, and I would say point blank that they're guilty of treason with what they're doing because they're serving the interests of a foreign power, namely Israel.
Well, absolutely. And the unfortunate problem with that proposal of mine is that if it was a Congressional House Un-American Activities Committee, the people doing the investigating are among the top suspects who should be in the spotlight of the investigation. It's right now we're at a place where the only thing that people like ourselves can do is to educate ourselves and try to spread that knowledge around. But we have plenty of historical precedent. We have the facts on our side, and this is why these Jewish interests that control the media, you know, everything from the TV stations, satellite networks, cable networks, newspapers, radio stations, all of it, and control all of the social media. I mean, own all of the social media, except for Twitter, which they control. They've got their stooge Jack Dorsey in there. They have this overbearing system of keeping anybody who has our views or anything close to our views from having a platform. That's the biggest problem that we have right now, is we've got to get the word out there because our ideas stand up to scrutiny, and they are ideas that can be easily understood by the average American white man and even plenty of people who aren't white men, but especially by the average American white man who is more than any other demographic under assault, relentless, overbearing, endless assault all day, every day by this system of government in collusion with media, in collusion with finance. And the only front that we can fight this war on is the information front. What do you think, Hate Farmer?
Yeah. And Eisenhower's original draft for that speech, it was the military-industrial-congressional complex. And if he were giving it today, it should be the military-industrial-congressional information complex.
Yeah, absolutely. That's, you know, one thing that That's one thing that Alex Jones is absolutely right about. When, you know, I mean, the very title of his organization and his show and everything is InfoWars. And while I don't agree with most of Alex's conclusions, he is absolutely right on that fundamental bit of information. It is an InfoWar. It is a war for your mind. The mind is where this battlefield is. The mind, the soul, you know. That's the only way that we can fight this battle. Hopefully, we're doing our little part here. The Crypto Report and InfoStormer and Daily Stormer and all that. It's definitely having an effect, wouldn't you say, Lee?
Yeah, I think we've done a pretty good job over the past few years. I mean, I remember, I think we've talked about this before, but I remember back like around 2012, 2013, around that time frame, things were really bleak. It just seemed like that nobody was really interested in any of this information. And then all of a sudden, like, things really started kicking into high gear, like around 2014, 2015. There was just a huge explosion in people understanding that we have this subversive alien race of Jews who are doing all these things behind the scenes to subvert our countries. And you had the whole white genocide thing come out. So even though they've made it very difficult for us to establish platforms and sites, and there's been all this censorship and everything, I mean, I know for a fact that, I mean, I've had several articles that have gone viral on platforms like Facebook and these major social media sites. And I believe that every little bit of that has an impact that reaches people, and then they talk to other people who then talk to other people. So it's like a viral effect that takes place. So I think that just by doing the stuff we're doing here, it's extremely valuable. And I think we're having a much bigger effect than people probably even realize right now.
Well, let's hope so. Let's hope so.
We better hope so.
Yeah, I mean,
they are putting it. They are putting an awful lot of money and effort into shutting us up. So
yeah, yeah, yeah. We absolutely can operate on most of these platforms that they do all this gaslighting on. All right. Well, guys, we have been at it for 2 hours. So I guess this is as good a place as any to conclude this 91st episode of the Crypto Report. If you came just for the lulls, sorry, I guess tune in Wednesday and there'll be plenty of those. But I guess just in a serious mood today. And of course, we got Lee Rogers on here who covers lots and lots of serious topics. Well, I guess... let's talk about one more thing before I end the show. You guys mind going a few minutes over?
No, sure. Definitely not.
Okay. This is another article from InfoStormer.com. And I guess it kind of brings us full circle back to the original topic of the show. Miami is turning into a literal third world shithole. You posted this today, Lee. It says,
yes,
America's cities are being transformed into third world shitholes. Take a look at the situation we have in Miami. This is from the Miami Herald. Homeless people living on the streets and sidewalks of downtown Miami are also relieving themselves on the streets and sidewalks of downtown Miami, turning the city's core into an outdoor toilet, merchants and residents say. The situation is the worst I've seen in my 25 years here, said business owner Jose Goyanes. The stench is really bad, even after you hose it down. We see people urinating against buildings or pulling their pants down and squatting because they have nowhere else to go. Deposits of human waste can be seen in planters, doorways, gutters, or right in the middle of the block. The pavement behind the old Macy's department store is soaked with urine. Feces ferment in front of vacant storefronts for days when there's no landlord to clean up. People who work and live downtown are calling in a code brown. It's prolific. It's on every block and at the base of most trees, said businessman Gary Ressler. I can't bring national tenants here and walk through downtown without having them observe human feces littering the sidewalk. The main reason why we have these problems in our city, this is Lee, The main reason why we have these problems in our cities is because third world populations have been allowed in, and they are transforming these places into the third world. It's not difficult to see what's going on here. Having homeless savages pissing and shitting in the streets is not something I would consider culturally enriching. Jews might believe that this is because they typically live in filthy dwellings. What would actually be culturally enriching is if we got rid of these worthless savages and fill our cities with white men and women of good character who want to do productive and creative things. Now, that would be culturally enriching. Lee, I can't imagine that that's not the proposal. Are people not proposing this who are, like, in control of things?
It doesn't appear that way. It seems like they want more of this for some reason.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Man, not long ago, places like Miami, just any place on the beach in Florida or whatever, were places that were so nice that people would fly from all over the world just to come and stay in some crappy hotel there and be able to walk out and get sunburned on the beach and such. And now, we have somehow allowed these places to be covered up with Africans and Latinos and other types of third worlders, not to mention all these mentally ill and drug addicts. But I mean, like, this is what we were talking about before. This is a story that's only in the Miami Herald. And, you know, we started off with a story from Seattle, and it all comes full circle. I mean, anywhere you look, you don't have to look hard to find this stuff, do you?
No, definitely not. I mean, it's in so many cities around the country. It doesn't really matter what region you're in. A lot of the major cities have a problem to some extent of this nature. It just depends how severe it is.
Well, it used to be that they would say, and it was true, that no matter what the politics of the area was, no matter who ran the local government, if it was a large metropolis, don't go into the downtown area after dark. But now it's like, don't go to the downtown area at all. And it's crept out so much farther than just the downtowns.
Yeah, there are large sections of places like San Francisco where it's totally unsafe to be wandering around in. And like I was saying earlier, even the tourist areas have been taken over by homeless and drug addicts and people you don't want to be around.
Yeah. Yeah. And what few places are left that are left wing where it may still be nice. I don't know for a fact because I don't live in these places, but Portland is still basically a Y-topia. You have these left wing governments that allow left wing agitating terrorist groups like Antifa to terrorize the whole place, demanding that they be turned into this kind of shithole.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, those people, they were attacking motorists and doing all sorts of weird shit.
Yeah. I don't know. It's beyond me. Beyond me, man. But there is hope. There is hope. All we got to do right now is spread the word. So let's do the plugs. And we will conclude this hopefully not too blackpilling episode of the Crypto Report. If you're a young white male of good character who is age 18 years or older and American, you should consider applying for membership with Stormer Book Club. For more information, email stormerbookclubs@airmail.cc. You should be reading InfoStormer every day. InfoStormer is the website of our good friend and today's co-host, Lee Rogers. Once again, that's infostormer.com. And while you're over there, feel free to sign up for the forum. Registration's open, and don't be shy about clicking on that contribute link and sharing some of your Bitcoin and Monero. Hate Farmer has a great DLive channel. It's linked in my DLive channel. Go check that out. And he does his show Duck Swaff and Uber Alles with Lamote every Saturday night around what time, Hate Farmer?
Generally 11 to 12. Somewhere in between there.
11 and 12 what?
Saturday nights, Pacific time.
Okay. So, like, really late. And for everybody else, for everybody on non-Pacific time. But yeah, it's a really good show. Good little show. And it deserves more listens. So give it a listen. And if you're not on DLive yet, what's wrong with you? That's where everybody cool is. That's what, and it's a great platform. We do the Crypto Report there twice a live, the live stream twice a week. TKR Live White Wednesday happens at dlive.tv/Asmodor every Wednesday at 9 Eastern, 8 Central, 6 Pacific. And the TKR Live Friday night special happens every Friday at 10 Eastern, 9 Central, 7 Pacific. And of course, right now you're listening to the flagship podcast of the Daily Stormer, which is posted every Monday on the Daily Stormer. Unless for some reason, like last week, which is very rare, we don't record one. But that is very, very rare. We have an RSS feed now. It's linked here, and it's also linked in the About section of the DLive channel. Paste that into your favorite podcast app and be notified every time the Crypto Report or the archives of the live streams are uploaded to Daily Stormer. We're uploading the archives of the live streams to both Daily Stormer and InfoStormer now. So you can check those out if you're not able to get in there live. But get in there live. The real action on DLive is being part of that chat. Lee, you've been part of them. What was your impression of the whole DLive experience?
Oh, it's definitely better than the YouTube chats and all that stuff they have over there. I mean, I thought DLive did a great job of adding a lot of interesting bells and whistles. There's ways you can donate to your favorite streamers.
Yeah.
So it's a really cool system. And plus the GIF file or the GIF files you can put into the chat are really cool and add to the experience.
Oh, yeah. The chat's a real party over there. It gets very festive. And we have the best chat on DLive. So come join it. DLive.tv/Asmodor. Give us a follow. It don't cost nothing. The official email of the Crypto Report is tkr@airmail.cc. There are several ways to donate to the Crypto Report if you support our content. They're all posted right here in the About section. Am I forgetting anything, Hate Farmer?
Merchandise.
Oh, yeah, yeah. The Gear Bubble Store. If you want some really cool merch, then you should definitely, definitely check out that link down there for the TKR merch store. I'm guessing that's it for today, for this week. Unless, Lee, you got anything you want to plug?
No, you plugged the site and the forum, so I'm happy.
Oh, I forgot.
Thanks for having me on.
I forgot to plug Daily Stormer. Make sure and read Daily Stormer every day. But you should already know that. But if you don't, do it. And if you're not on tour already, get on tour so that you can access the Daily Stormer all the time instead of just the times that Zog hasn't been able to force Daily Stormer off the surface web. All right. So we're going to close her out now for Hate Farmer, for Lee Rogers, and for the absent White Tuber. I am Asmodor, and this has been the 91st episode of The Crypto Report.